if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings, welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. This is our 2023 Charles Schwab Challenge and KLM Open Tips podcast, episode 260. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamper, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website where we have our in-depth betting previews for both events this week. We've got strokes gained analysis for both events. We've got course form statistics combined with current form stats, always useful. Plus, our brand new PGA and DP World Tour predictor models. All of these features, like this podcast, are completely free of charge with no paywall. On Twitter, Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available, along with my weekly golf betting show. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. As we say every week, these reviews are so, so important, so please keep them coming. This one is from J$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$$ content, five stars, knowledgeable fellows who utilise relevant statistics to break down the field. I highly recommend. Short but sweet. Thank you very much.
Lovely stuff. Yes, thank you, Jay Dollar. Let's call you Jay Dollar, shall we?
I love the way Steve reads out the full names. Somebody needs to troll them with a ridiculous Latin one.
underscores and stuff in.
I like the way people completely ignore, leave your name and where you are in the review, which I say every week. But anyway, the five-star reviews, they're very, very important. And of course, five stars, press that button on Spotify. Okay. There's an elephant in the room. We actually managed to snag a major championship winner, chaps.
Mm.
We're not used to this success.
Occasionally, all the stars align and all three of us end up on the same player, and that player does the job. I mean, congratulations to yourself, Steve, because you were the one with the written preview, put Brooks up, and he was... Well, back to Alpha Brooks, wasn't he? From the sighting that we saw at the Masters, where he was, he was very good, but couldn't quite stick the final round. This time, it was a different story. Very impressed.
It's a game of opinions, betting, golf betting, deep, DraftKings and whatever. But I was always completely convinced from that Masters performance. But it wasn't just that. All you had to do was look at the ridiculously basic live tour data to see that Brooks was actually playing properly.
Mm.
But because that strokes gain data isn't available and people can't crunch it into all of their optimizers and into all of their statistical models, Brooks wasn't appearing. So people weren't high on Brooks. They were high on Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, all these kind of people. But actually, Brooks was pretty made for it, wasn't he? Especially on a golf course that, we took it apart systematically and we said, typical PGA venue, power off the tee. I tell you what I was amazed by, the amount of roll on those fairways, considering that location when they turned up on Monday and went through all of the practice rounds and whatever. And then on Thursday, you just think, how the hell? You could tell that the course superintendent has a background at Augusta National. Andy Lack said that course was set up, you know, agronomy, you know, the agronomy side of it, and the firmness of it was amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing for that time of year.
Mm. Yeah, it did well, seeing as it was, you know, you'd have had the snow on the ground, what, 6 weeks earlier, wouldn't it?
6 weeks, I reckon.
Yeah.
Mm.
Amazing. There was none of this sloppiness from the start.
Mm.
I still say, though, I've got some takeouts. We'll go into those in a few minutes. I still say, as of Friday, turning the TV on, I thought I was dead. I already had the right hump because none of my players were doing anything. Xander was fanning about. Blah, 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 blah. They were all over par. And when I turned the coverage on Sky, I sat there, well, force yourself to watch it, Steve. Da, 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 da. It was raining. And I'm like, mate, this wasn't even forecast, this rain on Friday. Mm. This was the rain that was coming on Saturday. And for me, that is when Brooks Koepka turned the tables. And we said it all along. Soft golf course, hard golf course, par 70. That's his territory. And as soon as the ball started to actually land on fairways and started, the greens just lost some of that firmness and that release. All of a sudden, he started to score. And he managed to get himself into that top 10 going into Saturday. And I still say, and people in the golfing world have got their head around it, he's got that intimidation factor.
Oh, big star. You got Brooks staring you down or starting to gravitate up leaderboards, and people know just how good he is in the major championships and proving it once again. Yeah, we talked about it in the preview or the pre-preview pod. You know, a fit and healthy Brooks, which he hasn't been for a lot of these majors over the last few years. A fit and healthy Brooks is very, very capable of winning, as he did last week, but, you know, multiple more majors. So, yeah, we'll see how he pushes on from here.
US Open betting pool right now. Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm, 9-1 joint favourites. Rory McIlroy, 10-1. Brooks Koepka, 12-1. Can you explain that?
I saw someone mention on Twitter that in some of the American books that Max Homer was 10-1 for the
10-1.
No, yeah, it's not exactly
value. I can't compute how Rory McIlroy is 10-1. Brooks Koepka has won 5 majors since Rory is 12-1.
Mm.
Well, since Rory won his last, it's just madness.
It's a bit crazy. I think, do you know what, the thing I'm almost happiest about is that we didn't try outthink ourselves for this major. We, you know, looked at what we could and garnered what we could from the course and the evidence in front of us. It was quite apparent Brooks was a very obvious bet to us. And we didn't try get too clever then. We just kind of said, right, the facts are the facts, here we go. And that was good, very good to do that, considering we all somehow overlooked Rahm for the Masters or didn't even consider him. So great to get a team win and great to kind of correct the mistake we made at the Masters. It was a really good week, and it never, once it got to Sunday, it just never felt like it was, no matter what little blips happened along the way, it felt like inevitable. It's like you knew the end of the movie. You were just enjoying the ride.
Yeah. You always have that kind of confidence that he's not going to be the player that blows up. You know, inevitably there's going to be mistakes out there, but even when he made mistakes, they were minimized. They weren't doubles and trebles, were they? There was a bogey, and, you know, it wouldn't be long before he bounced back and just reasserted himself. And yeah, it's as relatively stress-free as a Sunday major can be when you've got a player in contention. That was the one.
Prime example on 6, drives it into a swamp, and you're thinking, oh my Lord, and then just works it all through, where did the ball cross, and then just literally lashes it back onto the green. Doesn't chase the pin, doesn't go anywhere near the water, just makes it land 5-10 feet front of the green. I'll lag putt it up there. make a bogey, we get out of here. How many people would have made double or worse?
Yeah, there's most of them would. Himself and Scheffler are fantastic at avoiding doubles. They just didn't. Mm-hmm. You never feel like there's a huge like a danger of it happening, or they'll figure a way out, unless there's OB on a hole, and that's the thing that'll catch them out. But if there's just the way it is that you feel bogey's the worst they're ever going to make, and that's in a major, that's phenomenal because you don't have that having to claw your way back from a double.
I've got some PGA takeouts. Right, number one, Brooks, 5 major victories. He's now T15 all-time. He's level with Byron Nelson and Seve Ballesteros. That's 2 good names. Of his current peers, and I say current in quotation marks, Phil Mickelson, 6, Tiger Woods, 15. They're the only 2 players on the current slate. Don't take that relatively, but you see what I'm saying? Who've got more victories? Right, point 2. Patrick Cantlay in majors. Now, in a month's time, maybe 2 months' time before the Open Championship, people are going to run the narrative that Cantlay is starting to perform better in major championships. Be careful in that assumption. Yes, he finished 9th, but the opening round he shot a 74. He was 73rd after round 1. So that 9th place, I've noted here, the ultimate backdoor major top 10. So Patrick Cantlay in majors, don't believe the hype. That's my takeout from that one. Right, point 3, back to Brooks Koepka. Now, I didn't add live players into my 8-week strokes gained analysis. The reason being that clearly only data collected was from Augusta. And that would have placed Phil Mickelson as the joint hottest player in the PGA Championship field. That was clearly not true. And I didn't want to go down the route of adding it to the preview and then being ridiculed. But just for the record, this was where Brooks would have actually sat in my 8-week stats. 14th for off the tee, 1st for approach, 3rd for tee to green, 1st for putting, 1st for current form. He would have been tied with Lefty because clearly they were T2 at Augusta. Yep. Now, I said to you before last week's betting show that I said to you guys that there is this trend now in majors on my 8-week numbers where the winner has always had a great record on the greens arriving. So Koepka goes straight in there because effectively I've now noted him that he was first for strokes gained putting going into that tournament. So that's a takeout for that one. I do like this. Someone that's hot with the putter or warmish with the putter. Now, clearly, that wasn't Scottie Scheffler last week. And ultimately, when you look at the numbers, Scottie Scheffler was first for strokes gained tee to green. No one's going to be surprised. 3.82 strokes per round. Koepka was second at 3.64. But Scottie was 35th for strokes gained putting. How many times did you see Scottie lipping out, leaving it short, missing? Brooks ranked 13th. For putting. That was the differentiator on the greens. Scottie isn't that warm with the putter right now, but tee to green is the best player on the planet, undoubtedly.
Yeah, if you look at the raw numbers, and I'm talking putts per round, over the course of the 4 days, Scheffler took 12 more putts than Brooks. So 3 a day. And over the course of 4 days, that makes a hell of a difference. When you've got players that are sitting right next to each other at the top of the leaderboard. You know, what was there, 2 shots between them at the end, but 12 putts between them over the course of the 4 days. And Scheffler, if he ever gets to a point where he's putting as well as some of the top players, he'd be absolutely unstoppable. But he's not there. And that's what makes this game intriguing, is that you've got all of these different facets to try and work through and to throw into the pot to come out with hopefully the right answer.
I've got a point here, chaps. Can we play the Ryder Cup in the rain? Saturday, best scores. Brooks Koepka, 66. Best score on the Saturday by two shots in those awful wet conditions. Mm. But you just listen to these names and listen to the complete lack of any elite American golfers. Tommy Fleetwood, 68. 69s. Tyrrell Hatton, Stefan Jaeger, Chris Kirk, Rory McIlroy, Victor Perez, Patrick Reed, doubt if he's going to be in their team, Justin Rose. Okay, let's go to the 70s. Let's go to the guys that made par, yeah, across that awful day. Michael Block, what a story. Michael Block, absolutely fantastic. Eric Cole, Corey Connors, Bryson DeChambeau, is he going to make their team? Victor Hovland, Hideki Matsuyama, Thomas Peters, Alex Smalley, Cameron Smith. Can we play the Ryder Cup in the rain, please?
Well, you never know.
Can Luke Donald get some kind of planes flying over Rome on the Friday, the Saturday and the Sunday? Because we'll win the Ryder Cup by a landslide. Play it in the rain.
Well, Rory tends to be good at doing a rain dance. How many times have you turned up to a major and the forecast has been pretty placid and then suddenly the heavens open just to soften it up?
I thought those American names, though, that are in there are just absolutely apt of major championship golf and what you need. Koepka, Patrick Reed, Bryson DeChambeau, the three top-grade American players that actually ground it out in the worst of the conditions last week.
Yeah.
These are just worth mental notes. They're worth notes down the line. You know, when you're seeing a blustery, wet, open championship and all this kind of stuff, these are the kind of rounds you need to have made notes around. Who can actually hack it?
Yeah.
Final point. Victor Hovland has arrived in majors. He was 15th for fairways hit last week, 5th for greens in reg, 6th for scrambling. If you want that from a strokes game perspective, first for approach, 10th for around the green, 3rd for tee to green. And he certainly passed my eye test.
Now, you mentioned to me, Barry, just in chat during the final round, that Hovland's short game seems to have taken a massive step forward. Makes him a big player for the future.
Well, certainly in this type of setup where it's either bunker or thick rough, which it was for the most part, and he seems to have a variety of shots out of that thick rough, some surprising ways he played shots, but very effective. So you can see the comfort level is there, or it's not a discomfort, like we see when he has kind of a tight lie. Doesn't seem to me, it's not his happiest zone, but, he's getting there. You can see it. And, it just felt like he was not, it felt like he's gone up a level regardless of what the result was. And it was disappointing for him. I mean, that shot that ended up embedded in the bunker face, that's not the mistake. It's the mistakes off the tee. So he's trying to get tied to the corner. So he's only missed a shot by a little bit. He'll learn from that, and he's just getting closer and closer. And I immediately penciled him down for the Open Championship. Now, I know you need to do a bit of digging into Hoylake and see how that kind of matches up with what I've just said. But he was there last year at St Andrews, learned his lessons. So it's I think it's time to stop just kind of glossing past his name.
Yeah, agreed. Did I hear that he's working with a new short game coach? Because if he is, it's working. Some of those shots out of bunkers where he's just literally slinging it and the ball is just travelling and then hits the ground and stops with the spin were amazing.
Yep.
You wouldn't have seen that 6 months ago. He'd have been blading it over the green.
Yeah. But yeah, if you work on your weaknesses, we know the rest of his game is strong enough to contend, and it was strong enough to contend all round this week. It comes down to those finest of margins, and as you said, Barry, that the shot where he ended up in the bunker, and he ends up taking double out of that, which ultimately that was the end of his tournament. But up till that point, there was an awful lot to like, and yeah, gone are the days, as you just said, that you can't just put a line through a major where he's got to come into the thought process now.
I finished with the PJ. I mean, we've got a packed show here. So, anything else to say before we move on?
No, all good. Just an enjoyable week.
Well, I've got a message here for the listeners, and this is really important. After 6 years and 260 episodes as an independent pod, Golf Betting System has been nominated for Favourite Betting Podcast in the Smart Betting Club Awards. Naturally, we're overjoyed and humbled to have been nominated, and we sit amongst a plethora of big budget media and operator produced podcasts. So, of course, we have a humble request for you, the Golf Betting System podcast listeners. Support the pod. Please take the time to vote for us. I have placed a link near the top of the podcast description, or simply search 2023 Smart Betting Club Awards. It's an online questionnaire. It's literally, it's multi-choice. So it takes 3 minutes to fill in. We'd appreciate each and every one of you who cast a vote for the Golf Betting System podcast. Don't delay. Please vote for us today. If you could spare the time, it'd be much appreciated. If we could actually be mentioned in, say, the top three or something for best podcast, it would be absolutely amazing. So, yeah, a live link in the description box of the podcast. If you're listening on Apple and that doesn't work, just send me a tweet. I'll send you the link or to the actual survey itself. Right, two tournaments this week. Decent tournaments on both tours. You can't sniff at the Dutch Open. You can't sniff at the Charles Schwab Challenge, although the name's a bit annoying. But basically, they're visiting Colonial on the PGA Tour, which is one of the most traditional venues on the PGA Tour. We're back to Texas. It's the last event of the Texas swing. Colonial Country Club, Fort Worth, Texas. 1936, a Maxwell design. I classify it as a classical golf course, again, old-style, tree-lined, medium in length. When I say medium, it's a par 70 that plays at 7,209 yards. So I personally take it, it goes from short just into the medium category for me. Holes with water hazard 6, fairways. We're back to Bermuda grass, chaps. Tiffway 419 Bermuda grass on the fairways. The rough is a mix of Bermuda grass. It is 3 inches in length. So we're back to that Southern States agronomy. However, the greens this week are bent grass. So we stick with bent grass greens for the third week running. They are 5,000 square feet on average. So about the same kind of size as we saw last week at Oak Hill. This golf course really does play as difficult as the conditions. Saying that, it's a course that you cannot take liberties with. Last year, it ranked as the 11th most difficult course on tour. The season before that, bearing in mind the conditions were a lot easier, and when I say easier, I mean that the wind was lower. It played just on the fringes of the top 20 most difficult courses, so you can't take liberties around it. Looking at the forecast, I'm seeing potentially a lot of rain on Wednesday. So I wouldn't be surprised if they start the tournament on a softened golf course. I'm seeing a lot less wind this year than last year as well. So on the basis that it might be soft Thursday, less wind throughout, you know, the Texas wind always famous, it seems to have laid down to a degree for this event. I'm thinking, and I'm just looking at previous winning scores here. Sam Burns won this last year at 9-under. I don't see that. I think Jason Kokrag's 14 and Daniel Berger's 15-under par is in play. A good mid-teens winning score target. that makes sense as well. This is your traditional par 70 setup, two par fives, which keeps the scoring lower. Or should that be higher? Yeah, higher. Winning prices here. Burns 30 to 1. Coke Rag 60 to 1. Berger 70 to 1. If you remember that Berger win, it was the first tournament back post-COVID. It was a major. Daniel Berger won. I know Xander was right up there, as was Colin Morikawa and Justin Rose, but Berger won it. Kevin Na 70 to 1, Justin Rose 20 to 1. If I go back to 2010, the overall winning average here is 42 to 1. Past nine renewals since they went to this split PGA Tour season set up, 38 to 1. So that gives me a bit of hope that Scottie Scheffler at 5 to 1 doesn't win this week. It tends to be a decent, high-quality player of a certain ilk. Burns was 10th in the world when he won here last year. Coke Rag, 35th. Berger, 107. That's a bit of a falsy, I think, but anyway. And Kevin Na, 52nd. Justin Rose, 5th. Berger must have been coming back from a bit of a mini slump to be 107.
Yeah.
The lesser spotted Daniel Berger. Okay, I don't mind Daniel not playing because I'm not backing him at 16 to 1 to always miss the cut, as he does for me. There's a few things I've noticed here just going through the research. First thing, just looking at the course, this is something I'm now doing for every tournament. This is something I've added to my regime to try and find more winners. I literally go through satellite views of the course and try and break out where the approaches are coming from. What's obvious here is that 11 of the 18 holes are from 150 yards and in. That's a huge volume. So this is, it's Wedge City, isn't it? Any event where Kevin Na's winning, it just screams Wedge City. Yep. There's four from 175 to 200, two from 200 plus. But effectively, 11 of your 18 holes are from 150 yards and in. Also, a hell of a lot of left to right doglegs on this golf course. Hell of a lot. The other thing I've noticed here is, if you go back to the last three winners, you can make it as simple as this. This is going to be a bit of a scary one for me, but birdie average and strokes gained putting. The last three winners, Sam Burns, 7th birdie average, 25th for strokes gained putting going into the event. Jason Kokrag, 23rd for birdie average, 7th for strokes gained putting going into the event. Seeing a pattern here. Year before that, Daniel Berger, 20th for birdie average, 26th for strokes gained putting. So you could be as basic as going through the PGA Tour stats as they are right now and saying, right, who's in the top 25 for strokes game, top 27, top 28 for strokes game putting and birdie average? I did.
I'm just having a quick look now for my players.
Cancel.
I did that, chaps. Because I'm that anal. That's why I get up at something stupid o'clock in the morning to go for all this kind of rubbish. Do you want a list of them?
Yeah, go.
I could take the fun out of it. Sam, look, pen and pencil, everybody. Pen and pencil. Or get your notes up on your phone. Right, here are the players in this field. Sam Burns. I'm scrolling, so there'll be a few gaps in between. Max Homer. It's quite a short list. Justin Rose. If you want a long shot, Sam Ryder. I'm still scrolling. Nick Taylor. Came very close on Nick Taylor. Post-it note, Hall of Shame. Brendan Todd. By my reckoning, there are only five in this field who have that. Did I say five? I meant six, didn't I? Six. who have those two parts.
Yeah.
There is definitely something here. And this is what makes this tournament quite scary for people that are using optimizers and modelers, because this doesn't smack of strokes gained ball striking when you're actually trying to pick the winner. It actually smacks, when I look at all of my strokes gained data and my 8-week rolling numbers, of people that actually had a very good hot putter arriving. And people hate that. You know, they want to be banging Ricky Fowler in at 22-1 because he's gained, you know, 18 shots, strokes gained ball striking over the last 3 months. Well, Ricky won't actually fall into these categories.
Mm.
Daniel Berger, Jason Kokrag and Sam Burns ranked all in the top 17 for strokes gained putting in my 8-week numbers arriving for this tournament. So I've effectively gone down this route wholeheartedly. I want good putters this week, and I want players that have clearly been making lots of birdies this year. I've kept it simple. I've almost walked away completely from strokes gained tee to green this week. And it is a scary thought. These are the guys that I've landed on. You won't be surprised to hear, bearing in mind we've been talking about Scottie Scheffler and his putting for ages, that I'm not on Scottie Scheffler the favourite this week. I see he's been nibbled in. People are jumping on that 5-1. They love it. He's now 9-2 favourite. My first player in is Max Homer. I've gone 2 points each way, 20-1 on Max Homer. And I managed to get that, I believe. Paul will correct me if I'm wrong, with Coral. Yeah. Who are actually offering 10 places each way this week. So 10 places each way at a decent price for Max Homer at 20-1. I was more than happy to take that. Now, if we're talking about a classical golf course, tree-lined, and a stretching course, you know, that isn't going to be 29 under par, Barry, Paul and I have worked out over the last two seasons that Max Homer isn't a bad bet. So I'm on Homer, who actually, if there was one thing he did well last week, it was putt. He sits well within the... Where is he in my strokes game putting numbers? He must be very high, because otherwise I wouldn't have included him. I think... Where is he? Where can I see Max? Max, where are... Top 19 last 8 weeks for strokes game putting. So I think Max should get his third win of the season this week. I just get the feeling that at this wedge fest, he actually sits in the top 45 for proximity from 100 to 125 and the top 20 for approaches from 125 to 150. So, brilliant wedge player, fantastically strong putter at the moment. The sort that can navigate himself round a nice 12 to 14, 15 under winning score. That's his kind of MO. I think Homer, after the disappointment of the major... He didn't play that badly last week, to be honest. Coming up on Friday, he was fringy top 20. He was there or thereabouts, and then just a couple of, you know, as happened on that course, cut the doubles flying, and all of a sudden he's more towards the bottom end of the cut than actually fringe contention. Mm-hmm. I think Max is playing okay under the radar, and he was eighth the week... 2 weeks before the PGA at Quail Hollow. He can't be playing that badly. So I took 20-1 on Max Homer. I've also gone for a player that is also putting very well, and that tends to be his MO anyway. I've gone for Sam Burns. Now, he's the defending champion here. You're not going to find him in any tee to green models because his tee to green recently has been poor. But again, you know, would you have found Jason Kokrag 2 years ago if you're just going from a tee to green modelling? You wouldn't. No, you just wouldn't have found him. No. Would you have found Daniel Berger in that field of elite players? No, you wouldn't. Would you have found Kevin Na the year before that? No, you wouldn't. That's the point about this test. you've got to think, for me, a little bit illogically. You've got to look at short game. You've got to look at strong putting. You've got to look also at people that are very, very specialised in what they do. And if there's one thing Sam Burns can't do right now, he can't go to a major setup in New York State when it's cold, it's wet, it's long. It's just not his MO, miscut. But actually, if you look at his form recently on courses that do suit him, yeah, he's playing quite well. Sixth at the Valspar when defending. He won the WGC Dell World Match Play. What is that golf course? Well, it's a short Bermuda grass par 71 where birdies are clearly the way to go. And then he was 15th at Harbortown the week after the Masters. So actually, those three courses, Copperhead, TPC Austin, and Harbortown itself, they're three courses that do suit Sam Burns for my liking. He's that kind of player. So actually, I think he's playing okay. And when he's defended titles so far, he's finished first at the 2022 Valspar, 30th at the 2022 Sanderson Farms, and sixth at the 2023 Valspar. So he's won and finished sixth so far in three times that he's defending a title. So I took 25-1 on Sam Burns, 1.5 each way. Again, I got that with Coral, 10 places each way. That's nice. I like that a lot. Last one, and again, no apologies for this. The way that the PGA Tour is going, the way that sub 28-1 winners are literally winning week in, week out, I've gone for another player 28-1 this week. Now, I was watching the very good Rick Gaiman this morning on YouTube. I was watching his show. He's putting all of his numbers into a model. Right, what's it going to spit out? What's it going to spit out? And you can see he's really excited. He's really excited because Scotty Scheffler's going to come out number one. And all of a sudden, right, the results come up on the screen. And all of a sudden, the blood falls out of his face. Oh, boy. These are his words. Oh, boy. Justin Rose, number one. Yikes. And that's the point. Put everything into a model. Put a short course, bent grass greens, current form. Who's doing really well at the moment? Justin Rose. He's actually third in my strokes gained numbers over the last 8 weeks for strokes gained current form. In fact, in reality, he's actually number two because I've included Michael Block. Take Michael Block out there. Scotty Scheffler, number one. Justin Rose, number two. Tommy Fleetwood, number three. I can see Tommy Fleetwood being very popular this week, especially at his price point. By the way, Colonial winners, just for the note, I went back way, way back, 2008, 2007, 2006. They all had a PGA Tour victory before they won this. So I'm just throwing that out there. But I'm landing on Rose because I know he was ninth last week. I know he was contending in the May. That's the thing, boys. Justin Rose was contending in a major and he finished ninth. Patrick Cantlay was never contending in a major. He finished ninth. But yeah, I'm on Rose as well. He's got a great record here. 13th, 05, first time he ever visited. First in 2018 and third in that 2020 renewal when basically it was like a major championship coming back from COVID. Loves this golf course. He's third for strokes gained total in our strokes gained analysis on Justin Rose. Just to throw in there, by the way, before I move on. Inbound form of winners of this, right? Since the PGA. Burns was 20th at the PGA at PGA Championship. 49th was Jason Kokrak and Kevin Na missed the cut. There was Davis Riley last year. He was 10th after 54 holes. He finished 13th at the PGA. I'm just hoping that Rose follows that kind of model. I don't think backing players of the ilk of Cam Davis this week is the way to go. Players that were in the top 10 last week, making a major breakthrough. Mm. Just looking at the players that have contended in this Colonial afterwards, I'm reading 78th miscut, 64th miscut, 30th, 17th, 30th, 49th, 13th, 30th and 20th. Miscut, miscut, miscut. Those are the people that actually won and placed, got each way money and what they did at the PGA over the last three renewals. So actually, people that were right up at the top of the leaderboard last week, like a Victor Hovland, I wouldn't go anywhere near them. Rosie's the one that I've actually, because the numbers fit, he fits. Whenever I put Justin Rose up, he does nothing for me anyway. But anyway, so at the top of the tree, I've got Homer, I've got Burns, I've got Rose. I've spoken for far too long. Over to you two. I've got two incredibly long shots.
Yeah, I've only backed one who's in that, not even in that bracket, it's slightly short than that. It's extremely obvious, but it's Jordan Spieth at 14-1. Now, it kind of fits the narrative that you just described there, which, kind of being out of the mix last week. 29th he finished at the PGA. But if you look through his stats, he improved all the way through the week, 73, 72, 71, 69. So he got better and better as the week went on. And you don't have to go back too far to find some really good form. Fourth at the Masters, second at the Heritage. In fact, that's five top six finishes in his last 10 starts. Overall, so playing some nice stuff, Spieth. And the fact is, we just know, if you look at the stats this week, look at the event stats pages, Spieth's all over it. He's all over the strokes gained data as well. He absolutely loves Colonial. One in 2016, three more runner-up finishes, four more top tens over the years. If you look at the top eight, I've got him 14-1 for eight places each way. Seven of his 10 starts here have finished in a top eight finish. So as a short-priced each-way chance, Jordan Spieth made an awful lot of sense for me this week. But he's the only one I've backed near the top of the market. I've got a three-figure chance, which I'll go through in a little while. Barry, what about you? Got any picks this week?
I'm with you on Homer, Steve. It makes a lot of sense. And just took him on the machine at 28. I'm not interested in messing around with halving my stake or just to get an each way in. It's all or nothing. And the other one that got in my head when I saw he earned his special temporary membership was Minwoo Lee, who played very solid last week. And yep. I know he doesn't have the experience on the course that you need, but trends.
He did play it last year, so at least he's seen the course. A lot of these places he's going to, he's never seen them. So this is actually his second visit to Colonial. So that's a big positive for me.
Yeah. So I suppose he's not the most accurate driver out there, but there'll be a lot of holes he can use less than driver this week. So he's got more than enough horsepower in the tank. Just looking at his European Tour stats for the season so far, he's 16th greens in regulation. 7th putts per green in regulation and 5th in sand saves. And so those all kind of converge into a nice thing, and he's got a good feeling about his special temporary membership. He doesn't need to worry about his performances now. He's kind of freewheeling, so jumped on it.
I thought there was a bit of value in his price. These strokes gain numbers you pull together, Paul, are absolutely fabulous. I put a link to the strokes gain analysis and the rankings in the description box. Come and look at them. I mean, this stuff is completely free of charge, where you're paying a lot of money to get this kind of data from other websites. Take Davis Riley out of the equation because he's played one round here. Jordan Spieth, strokes gain total, 2.58 over 28 rounds. The next best is Justin Rose at 1.72. That is almost like lapping the field. Spieth is so much better around here than anybody else. But I'll just... Spieth at one. This is for players that have played multiple tournaments here. Rose is at two. And this is a great segue. For me, Harris English is at three. Now, I've put up English this week as well. Because English, for me, fits into the Jason Kokrag and Kevin Na category of winner here. Absolutely perfectly. If you look at Harris English, he's a kind of... when he played the Ryder Cup in 2019, he was absolutely at the top of his game, and then he's just slumped. But this year, there have been seeds, and quite obvious seeds. 12th at the Genesis... He was second at the Arnold Palmer Invitational and he was third at the Wells Fargo Championship. Now, by by my rankings, those three are all elevated events, yeah? A 12th, a 2nd, and a 3rd. It's not as if he's playing badly, is he? All of a sudden, the approaches are starting to work a lot better. He gained 7.5 strokes with his approach play at Quail Hollow a few weeks ago. That's his best iron play performance going back to the 2017 St Jude Classic and his second best ever on tour. He's in the top 40 in the world. So this is what I'm saying. Kokrad kind of angle, Gnar kind of angle. A good top 50 player that's actually deeper in the prices and he's actually playing well under the surface. Don't forget as well, wins have come at Southwind, El Chameleon and TPC River Highlands. Three of his four wins, they are all short to medium length, non-par 72s. And that record here, fifth on debut in 2012, 30th in 2014, second in 2016, 29th in 2017, 20th in 2018 across seven appearances. That's why you're finding him third in the strokes gained total analysis that we run, Harris English. So I'm on him. I took 66-1 on Harris English. I believe, let's have a look. I doubt if he's been very popular. I can't see it. Can't even find him. People have nibbled him. But yes, you can still, there are still 90-1 available at Unibet if you fancy a bet on Harris English. I've now got two players that are humongous prices, 250-1 and 350-1. Do you want to insert your tips in there before me? Or
yeah, I've only got one more. So the other one I've backed is Ryan Palmer at 110-1.
Please tell me you've taken 12 places.
28 places each way.
Please tell me you haven't backed him six places with Unibet.
No, I've backed him 110 with eight places each way. Which
you're going to need every single one of those places.
Well, yeah, you know, he can do it around here.
He's a member, isn't he? This is his club.
And well, he's great in Texas. I mean, I counted through his top 10 finishes in Texas over the years. Home state, of course. 13 top 10 finishes I counted. Four top six finishes here at Colonial over the years. And he does seem to be rounding into a bit of form. 35th at the Wells Fargo, 8th at the Byron Nelson. Some good long game stats coming out of that. He played the US Open qualifying yesterday, opened with a 63. Just missed out in the end. But again, you know, showing some sparks of form. It could be one for the first round leader market as well. I do tend to look at Ryan Palmer, first round leader, and I'll see where he sits with his tee time. Yes, I understand the limitations when it comes to Sunday because they're real. And, you know, it can be a bit of a letdown when you get to that point. But if I'm getting an each way pace.
People go, I can't believe, Paul, people go, I can't believe Ryan Palmer's bottled it on a Sunday. You're like, really? How long have you been golf betting for?
Yeah, but if he sneaks into a top eight, which I think, you know, this is the kind of course that he can do that, and he has done it. I mean, he's done it multiple times. So home comforts, playing some decent stuff. And yes, I'll take a look at the first round leader market when it comes up and see where he sits on that, because he's always one he'd likes to get out of the track.
What price did you get?
110-1 for eight places. Yeah, so yeah,
Coral, price. Coral, 10 places, 60 to one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because they know that they might be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, he's bound to finish tied ninth now. But I'll take my chances with that. But yeah,
any more for you, Barrett? Yeah, Ryan Palmer. That's a great bet for an each way punt. Yeah, he loves Texas, loves this course. Any for you, Barrett?
I'm trying to remember if I have Andrew Putnam on my enemies list. He may have. It rings a bell having annoyed me before going up against one of my other bets, but he is 11th in your strokes gained for the Charles Schwab Challenge and has enough accuracy and putting skills to warrant me backing him at 110-1, 12 places.
Colonial for me is one of these courses. It's it's a Kevin Kisner course. It's this mini tour of courses: Greenbrier, Sony Open, RSM Classic, Sedgefield Country Club. Yeah, short wedge fests, and that's where players of an Andrew Putnam's. You look at where Putnam's done well. I know he's absolutely ecstatically good at the Sony Open. I think he's had a top. Is he finished second at that the Birdie Fest they play at Humane, the one in PGA West California? Yeah, just these kind of courses. That's right up his street. Couldn't agree more with that one. I'll tell you who's playing well, tee to green, Matthew Neesmith. Oh, I haven't put him up, but he's one to look out. Oh, by the way, I did mention last week Kurt Kitayama at a big price.
Mm.
Yeah. Did
his
come
price
in
is quite
didn't
high
it?
This week, isn't it? And another price I saw that looked that was out really high, considering his finish last week, was Sepp Straka's.
Yeah. Sepp Straka, he does like it. I mean, he won the Honda Classic. Give him something 7-8 under par. Really tough. Sepp Straka actually comes to the fore. I've gone for two at ridiculous prices. I've only gone a half point each way. Kevin Tway. Now, Kevin Tway is... you're going to love this. Kevin Tway is a poor man's Cameron Champ. Now, that is poor. I know that. I get that. Kevin Tway is a poor man Cameron's Champ. He's absolute garbage for month after month after month, and then something clicks. And when it clicks, have a little shekel on him. Because he's very good at finishing, say, tied fifth, then the tournament after, tied sixth, and then disappears again. That's what Kevin Tway does. He's actually won on the PGA Tour. He won the 2018 Safeway Open, which they play at Silverado. Now, Silverado, tree-lined, old-style, relatively short golf course. So there's an MO here. When you look at Tway, even though he lives in Florida, doesn't ever seem really to get on with Bermuda grass. He likes bent grass greens. He likes bent poa mix greens. So actually, this course kind of stands up. He got a sponsor's invite into this. That's how, you know, clearly, I don't know. I don't know what Kevin Tway's done, but he's got a sponsor's invite. But actually, when you look at where he has played well, and it is limited, because he's not very good. 20th at Las Colinas, that's where they used to play the Byron Nelson. They're bent grass greens. He's had a 9th at Trinity Forest. He's had a 2nd at Memorial Park. This is all in Texas. Memorial Park is where they now play the Houston Open. Now, that is Bermuda grass greens. He's also had 11th, this is the point, 11th 2 weeks ago at Craig Ranch, bent grass. Played really nicely. Shot 66-63 over the weekend. Absolutely lit the afterburners. Found something in his game. He was T4 for the last 36 holes scoring at the Byron Nelson. Behind only Jason Day, the winner, Austin Ekro and Stefan Jaeger. I got Tway 250-1, 8 places each way with Ball Sports. Just one of those random bets. He's had an 18th, a 5th and a 19th here. Now, he could just as well miss the cut. He could hang about on the leaderboard. So I'm on him at 250-1. The one I couldn't quite get my head around, and I'm surprised Paul isn't on him, because Paul is the Ches Reavy whisperer. 350-1 on Ches Reavy. That's crazy. I've managed to get that with Bet365, 8 places each way. Now, Ches Reavy, he was hanging around the fringes of the top 15 in the final round at the PGA Championship last week on Sunday. Ches Reavy, he's hitting the ball 275, 280 yards off the tee. And when you look at his numbers, he was losing 4 shots off the tee last week. 4 shots off the tee, Ches Reavy. And he was on the fringes of the top 15 midway, at halfway of his final round.
Hmm.
That's just mad. Now, where does Reavy play well, Paul? Short, classical, old-style golf courses.
Yeah. Somewhere where...
5th, 11th and 27th here last year. I'm seeing him, Reavy, in the top 20 of a lot of my strokes gain numbers.
Mm.
How about ninth for approach, seventh for putting, and 21st for strokes gained current form over the last 8 weeks. I couldn't believe it. 350-1.
Well, that seventh for putting is a bit of an eye-opener, because that's not his game. So that's must be where he's making the inroads at the moment.
So yeah, Ches Reavie, mate. Is it Ches or Che? I never quite get my head around it. Whatever way it is, I'll pronounce it wrong.
Short for Chesney, I'm sure. I'm sure it's his full name's Chesney, so it's just a.
I love it. I mean, 351 all over it like a rash. So Ches Reavie 350-1. I can't believe I've got that price. Kevin Tway 250-1. Harris English at 66s. I've then got three at 28-1 and less. Rose, Burns 25s. Max Homer 20-1. Right, let's move on. We have the Dutch Open pool. Over to you.
Yes, yeah, the KLM Open. They've got the
yeah, it's good to see. They're back.
Yes, they are.
You can't have a Dutch Open without their own airline, can you? Their own carrier.
Yeah, they did. They dipped out of it for a couple of years. It must have been around COVID, and I suspect the coffers were a bit tight at the time. But yeah, they're back in. So yeah, it's back to the KLM Open. But it's just still your kind of regular DP World Tour event. Nothing special about it, even with their sponsorship. So it's still $2 million prize fund. A full field of 156 runners this week. Going through the market, top of the market, we've got Victor Perez, Adrian Meronk. They're pretty inseparable at, well, a general 12-1. There's a couple of places where they're both 14-1 at the moment, but they're both being backed. I expect, looking at the way it's going, they'll go off as 12-1 favourites, joint favourites this week, Perez and Adrian Meronk. Alexander Bjork, 22-1. Rasmus Højgaard, 25s. Jordan Smith, 25-1. Antoine Rosner, 28s. Romain Langasque, 33-1. 35-1 bar. Pretty regular, with the addition of Victor Perez, is pretty regular betting market to the ones that we've seen in the last few weeks on the DP World Tour. Ball Sports, sticking with their eight places each way, standard proposition on the DP, which is good. And of course, Bet365 offering their each way extra proposition on this event, as they do pretty much each and every week. The course, we're returning to Barnardus Golf, and we're coming back for the third successive year. So if you're looking through the stats this week, I've made a note on the event history stats and the combined stats, that it's the last 2 years which are relevant to this this week's test. Prior to that, it kind of hopped about from different courses in Holland, but a lot of them are quite similar. A lot of them have correlation to each other, so you know, don't totally disregard the older data. There is some relevance to it, but the very specific stats are just from the last 2 years here at Barnardus. The course itself is a Carl Phillips design. If you're thinking Carl Phillips, think Kings Barnes, which is part of the Dunhill Links rotation. Dundonald Links, which was the Scottish Open venue in years gone by. The Grove, where they hosted the British Masters back in 2016 in England here. Hilversumsch. Now, that was a another KLM Open venue from 2010 to 2012. So there's a few others. I've listed them all in my preview. So if you're interested, you want to do some deeper research, then you can come and find those different courses that Kyle Phillips has designed over the years. This one, it's a 7,445-yard par 72. It's a flat, typically exposed Dutch-style track. Described as heathland, but if you look through some of the player comments or listen to some of the interviews from the two renewals we've had here so far, the players tend to suggest that it plays very much like a true links course. Deep bunkering, long fescue rough, bent grass greens. It is that kind of style track. So there's a theme that runs through some of my picks a bit later on, which kind of ties in with that. It's a typical kind of 72 setup with four par fives, a couple of short par fours. In terms of the weather conditions, they do look good. It looks like it's going to be dry and sunny. Temperatures edging up towards the low 70s by the weekend. Winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. It is an exposed course, so any wind is accentuated here and can make quite a dramatic difference to the winning total, I'd have thought. But 10 to 15 miles an hour, that'll keep the players honest without presenting a massive threat to them this week, I think. And there is loads of history, the two of you know, from the events that we've had here. As I said, the most relevant are the last two. So if you're looking at the winners, 2021, that was Christopher Broberg at 275-1. Last year, it was... good luck plucking that one out. Last year, it was Victor Perez at 50-1. Big price on Victor Perez for a player of his quality. But that was the price pre-event last year. We do have full strokes gain, as Steve said right at the top of the show. There's strokes gain data from those two renewals and regular stats as well. So we're spoiled this week. We've actually got some full data for the DP World Tour, which is good. So there's enough of us to chew on this week, even though it is just from two events effectively for course history. Some difference between the two renewals, though. Broberg, he won at 23 under par. That was in the autumn. Softer conditions presented far more scoring opportunities to the player, 23 under. Victor Perez last year, 13 under par. It's a 10-shot differential. And it wasn't particularly blowy last year. It was firmer. It was this time of year as well. So if we're looking for parallels, personally, I think it's more likely to be like the Victor Perez renewal from last year. So kind of that mid-teens under par rather than an out-and-out birdie fest. Because I don't think it's going to be soft enough to warrant that. As we know with the DP World Tour, they can throw some curveballs in. So it could be, they may go and water it all and make it super soft. But I doubt it. I think it will just be allowed to run and play the way that nature was intended. And, I can see kind of 13, 14, 15, something like that being the number this week. We'll see. Now, of course, to get to a 23-under total, you need to have a hot putter. And that was exactly how Broberg got to his winning total. He was first for scrambling, sixth for putting average, and first for strokes gained putting when he won round here. Perez, that was much more about the long game. Fifth for driving distance. He hit over 70% of fairways. He was 75% greens in regulation. That was fourth. That translated to second for strokes gained off the tee and first for strokes gained tee to green. So two very different ways to get round. As I said, I think personally, similar conditions this year to last, same time of year, I think that the Victor Perez route, so slightly longer off the tee, better from tee to green, I think that will be the way to attack this rather than just going out with an out-and-out red-hot putter. But of course, we've only got a sample of 2 years. So, you know, that assertion could be entirely wrong. But I think, you know, an educated guess, that would be the way to go. In terms of incoming form, both men had a top 12 finish in their previous six. So there was a little bit to go on with Broberg, even though he was a silly long price. The thing with Broberg is he hadn't played for the previous 6 weeks. And you had to go back quite a while to find that top 12 finish. Perez, he'd finished 21st at the British Masters, 33rd on his last start at the Sudal Open. He had finished 8th at the ISPS Handa Championship in Spain a few weeks prior to that. So there was something to go with Perez, even though he was 50-1. Yeah, and other than that, it's not one of those traditional events where you can traditionally look at course form and event form. Broberg had missed, he was making his course debut here when he won. Victor Perez had won, or had missed the cut rather, the year before. So there was no course form to go on from either of these guys. And it feels to me it's much more of an event where you need to kind of work through the course fit, I think, rather than trying to pluck anything out specifically from current form and event form stats. But we'll see. Exposed Lynxy track, I think it appeals to a certain type of player this week. Perez, former Dunhill Lynx winner. So again, he had that Lynx form to fall back in. Ryan Fox finished runner-up last year. Ryan Fox is one of those players that, again, you always need to look at when you come into a Lynx or a Lynx style course. And, so it proved last year he could have won as well quite readily. So, going down that route kind of leads you down to a certain type of player, I think. I did look at the top of the market. I looked at Victor Perez, looked at Adrian Moronk. You can't ignore them. They're both, clear favourites, clear joint favourites. Perez finished 12th at the PGA last week. Moronk finished 40th. So both of them are flying back after four rounds. Personally, you know, you've got jet lag to consider. You've got the, you know, the kind of the come down from a major championship to what is a regular DP World Tour tour event. Not convinced on either of them personally, even though Perez won here last year. Meronk was third. And Meronk won in Italy a fortnight ago. You know, he's playing some great stuff. Can I take them at 12-1? I don't think there's any value in either of those. You know, either of those prices. So yeah, I've let them go. I've preferred to look a little bit deeper down the list this week. The one that I've plumped on first was Eddie Pepperell, 45-1. Now, Eddie started this year four missed cuts in awful form. By his own estimation, he was playing some really poor stuff. Took 3 months off to regroup more than anything. Came back, Italian Open, finished ninth. Some really nice numbers coming out of his game as well. Eighth for strokes gained approach, ninth for strokes gained tee to green. The putter warmed up a little bit at the Sudal Open. He finished 22nd at the Sudal. Hasn't played since, and I think he can come here and really push on the kind of terrain that really does suit him. He won in Doha in 2018, and that course there over in Qatar, that's often a good barometer for players that can play well on links or links style courses. We saw him win at Walton Heath later in 2018, and you know, that's got clear relevance to this Heathland style track. When we were there at Walton Heath, it was you know, it was dry, it was almost linksy back in the day then, and I think that's kind of what we should expect this week. And Holland, I mean, for Freddie, that's been a really positive venue over the years. Four top six finishes in the country. He was 14th here last year. Now, that was 14th when he was playing some, you know, pretty poor stuff in general. I think he'd missed six out of his previous eight cuts, so wasn't playing good. Came here, finished 14th regardless. I think he's in a far better place right now. 45-1, I thought, was a good, strong each-way price to take. So quite happy with that. Also back Callum Shinkwin. If you look at Shinkwin's raw numbers, he's got two missed cuts out of his last two outings. And I think that kind of explains why you get in. Well, I took 50-1 with eight places. You can get 60s if you are happy just to take the bog standard each-way places. But if you look, missed cut Sudal Open, he was getting himself ready to go to the PGA Championship. He played Oak Hill last week. He did miss the cut at Oak Hill. But I can forgive anyone who turns up to an event that they're committed to prior to going to a major and just, you know, throttle down, disappear on the Friday night and get yourself ready for the major. Of course, he missed the cut at Oak Hill, so that means he's got an extra couple of days to prepare for this. 2 days extra over the likes of a Perez and a Meronk. And I think if you go back prior to that, he's been playing some good stuff. Fourth at the Dubai Desert Classic, ninth at the Italian Open. His approach game in the Italian Open was good. He was ninth for strokes gained approach. And that can often be the area that can make or break Callum Shinkwin's performances. Because he's great off the tee. Second for strokes gained off the tee for the season to date. 19th for strokes gained tee to green. If he gets that spark with his irons, the approach game starts working, then he can be dangerous, I think. He was runner-up, we'll remember this, to Rafa Cabrera-Bello at the Dundonald Links back in 2017. That was the one that he should have won to break through. That's a Kyle Phillips design. I say he should have won that. He was second at last year's Dunhill Links. So again, you've got the Phillips link there. He's won on a couple of exposed tracks. One in Cyprus, also one at Celtic Manor. I think Callum Shinkwood could go well. Another nice mid-price as an each-way punt. Similar price for Grant Forrest, 60-1. Again, that was with eight places. You can take 70s if you prefer. Scott from Livingstone, he now lives on the North Berwick coast, so he's at home with these linksy style tracks. Got his breakthrough in 2021. That was at Fairmont St Andrews. Third at Hillside last year. Playing some really good, consistent golf so far in 2023. Seven cuts, seven starts. 10th in Abu Dhabi, 6th in Singapore, 13th Thailand, 11th Kenya, 4th in Japan. Really nice, consistent form for Grant Forrest. And a good each-way punt, I think. As is fellow Scott Ewan Ferguson. I think one of you guys put Ferguson up a week or two back. And you know, he's been backed again this week. And I can see why. I backed him 60-1 with eight places. That's all gone. There's still some 55s out there. I suspect he'll go kind of 45-50 by the time we go off because he has been popular. And he won twice this kind of time last year. And in a six-month spell, actually, he could have won three times. If it wouldn't have been for Ollie Wilson's magical putter at the Made in Himmerland, he would have won three times in the space of 6 months over the summer last year. Like Pepperell, he also won the Qatar Masters at Doha. He's got experience here. He finished 37th here last year, and it was eighth after the first day. And found a little bit of form recently. He got back-to-back top four finishes in South Africa in March. And I think this style course should suit him far more than those longer South African altitude affairs. So Ewan Ferguson seems like a decent, again, mid-range, mid-price, each-way punt for me. The final one I've backed, 90-1 with eight places. Again, you can get 100-1 if you prefer to take fewer places. Daniel Bradbury, the Wakefield man, 23 years old, has got a huge career ahead of him, I think, Dan Bradbury. Won the Joburg Open, what was just his third start on the DP World Tour last November. That was his sixth start as a professional. Got a great team behind him. I think they fully believe that this guy could go top 50 in the world and beyond. And I think they could well be right. Decent long game, top 25 for total driving and 9 of the 10 starts that he's had where he's made the cut on the DP World Tour. Second for greens in regulation, last two times out. 10th overall last time at the Sudal Open. He was first for strokes gained approach, first for strokes gained tee to green in his last start. Playing some nice stuff. We don't know enough about Dan Bradbury to really kind of pigeonhole him as a certain style of player, but I think going to a course where the history is relatively light isn't going to be as much of a negative as it could be on some other courses. He's playing the right kind of game to compete here. He shot 61 at Moortown Golf Club back in February. And that's another Heathland, kind of moorland style track. It's got a lot of game, the boy. A couple of holding ones for the season to date as well on the DP World Tour. I've got to give him a chance. 90-1, say 100-1 if you prefer to take it with fewer places, but I'll take the 8, take the 90-1. That'd be a nice little winner. But then my 5, Bradbury, Ferguson, Forrest, Shinquin, Eddie Pepperell. You having a punt on the DP this week, Barry?
I'm going to keep sticking with Alexander Bjork. Can't, just the guy's gone well. It's either going to pop or he'll fall off. But nothing seems to be phasing him right now on a great run. And this should just be a fairly reasonably friendly test. So see, can he go and do it? Beyond that, kind of apprehensive, nervous. I like the Eddie Pepperell shout and the Doha link. That definitely makes really good sense. I'm lagging a little bit behind my usual frantic podcast Googling of who I'm going to back for this tour. So, I might come up with one or two more, but wary of the unpredictability of the DP World Tour.
No, I understand. If I was going to take one near the top, it would have been Bjork. He did appear on an awful lot of my stats, and I think if you're going each way at what 20-22-1, that kind of number, I wouldn't be remotely surprised to see him finish in the each way places. So if it was a single bet for the week and it was a larger each way bet on him at that kind of price, then I think you could end up positive for the week. Whether he wins today, we'll see. He's got Eddie to beat first.
This is true.
What about you, Steve?
My gut feel was Ewan Ferguson.
Capable, wasn't he?
So I'm going to take 50-1 because I haven't backed him. I was literally just floating. I was doing the Barry School of research as you were talking. I'm looking. Ewan Ferguson seems to be the one to me. Just from what you were saying, I mean, he seemed to find form back in South Africa, didn't he?
Yeah, a couple of top fours, yeah.
Yeah. And from what you're saying, it's not kind of up front, staring you in the face form that tends to win this.
No.
I think he fits quite nicely. And we know with the guy, once he's in contention, he's locked, isn't he? He just hangs around and either wins or goes extremely close to winning.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not a, you know, not something that all of the DP World Tour players have got in their locker.
No.
And, you know, he quite reasonably could and perhaps should have won the third one last year because, you know, it was only Ollie Wilson who was making 60 footers that stopped him from winning the third title. And, yeah, I think when he gets a bit between his teeth again, he could go on and win another title or two, I think. Quite possible.
So, yeah, Ewan Ferguson for me.
Mm. Good.
On the Ryder Cup front, oh, by the way, I just wanted to know, if people have made it this far on the podcast, they're clearly into their goal. Top 50 after this week get a start at the Open.
Okay, yeah, good.
Cam Davis, 49. I don't know if his PGA finish gets him in. Lucas Herbert, 48. Mironkis, 47. I think Mironk might get in for a DP World. Anyway, Fowler at 52. Denny McCarthy, 54. Poston, 56. There's some names.
There must be another cutoff for the US Open as well. Top 60 it tends to be.
I think that was last week after the PGA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Cam Davis played himself into the US Open by jumping to 49th in the world.
Yeah.
So, yes, everyone from Alex Noren up, Minwoo Lee, 61 in the world rankings. Noren, Victor Perez, Adam Svensson, Aaron Rise, JT Poston, Keith Mitchell, Denny McCarthy, Thomas Peters, Ricky Fowler and Matt Kuchar all got into the US Open last week outside the top 50 in the world. There you go. I just thought I'd highlight that because that can often motivate a player. Whether Ricky Fowler can win this week and qualify for the Open, we will find out. I was just thinking, Brooks Koepka's kind of come back from the middle of, you know, major issues to win a major. Then you had Jason Day the week before winning for the first time after 5 years. Will this be the week for Ricky and we're not on him?
Thanks a million, Steve. I've just got to go on and back him now.
Okay.
It doesn't seem to be the right kind of place for his game, but I've also got massive FOMO, so.
Sorry, I haven't persuaded you into anything.
It's okay. It's just a 3,000. It's just a 3,000 euro bet. It's no big deal.
Well, I hope your bets go well, champs. Good luck.
Yeah, you best too, boys. Luck, boys.
Good luck to listeners. Good luck to your DK teams and your bets. Don't forget the vote. If you could vote for us in that Smart Betting Club Awards, the Golf Betting System podcast, that would be much appreciated. Right, we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the Golf Betting System, the Golf